Yo, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the Hot Shot Wake Up. This is your weekly wildfire update. Thanks, everybody out there, for tuning in and listening. There was a large outbreak of fires that took place across the United States yesterday. Large fires in Oklahoma, Kansas, Nebraska, Colorado saw a bunch of fires. Iowa had fires that were pushing into Nebraska and down in Texas as well. The two that got a lot of attention would have been this fire down in Oklahoma outside of Sharon and Woodward County. And then the big splash in the media yesterday for Colorado was the power shutoffs that took place across many populated areas in Colorado, Fort Collins area, the Boulder area, parts of Denver, or the outskirts of Denver lost power as well. And this coming after Xcel Energy decided to pull the plug and said, hey, it's too dangerous for us to continue to operate with the red flag warnings that are going on. And this dates all the way back to the Marshall fire that took place, the investigation that came out with that. I noticed in some of the comments and people posting about that Marshall fire and how these winds and fires yesterday and the power shutoffs were reminiscent of that fire. And a lot of people were saying, yeah, Xcel Energy, they're the ones who started that fire. But as I reported on the Substack, it was actually officially caused by two different sources, not just an Xcel Energy source. And Xcel Energy in Colorado is saying that no, actually, we're not responsible for the Marshall Fire. But I covered that on the Substack. If you want to check that out, I did an entire podcast on it. They're saying that power lines that were under the jurisdiction of Xcel seemed damaged, or there was like a burn scar underneath one or a damaged transformer. But then it is also known that there was a debris pile burn that was taking place as well. And that had actually been checked in on by fire authorities, I believe the day before the Marshall Fire, maybe a couple days before. And then it shows that fire activity expanded from that the day the Marshall Fire happened. The official report suggests that there were two fires that merged together and then ended up being the deadly Marshall Fire that took place in Colorado. The whole point of me bringing it up yesterday was showing what I've been saying for the longest time, which is there's been these lawsuits happening against these power companies. And in some cases, large judgments, other cases, small judgments. You know, PG&E up in California filed for bankruptcy. You have PacifiCorp Power in Oregon that, you know, they've been sued in tunes of billions and billions of dollars for their part in wildfires that took place up there. And all of these lawsuits say you should have shut the power off during red flag warnings. But also in parts of these judgments, specifically in PG&E, they're like, hey, we'll bury our power lines if you dumb down our sentence a little bit. And then months later, they say, hey, burying power lines is too expensive. We're just not going to do exactly what we said we were going to do. We'll still bury some of them, but we're definitely not going to meet the miles and miles of buried lines that we promised. But for years now, I've been trying to warn the public that if you keep suing these power companies, the end result will be your power being shut off, your rates going up, and then if there still are fires, insurance companies raising your rates and leaving your state and canceling your policies, and then everything falls on the taxpayer. This is the cycle I've been warning about. It was very eye-opening talking to people down in Colorado who had been living there for a decade plus, and they're like, we've seen windier days and they've never shut our power off, so this is kind of surprising. In April, them shutting our power off when they haven't done it in the past. And that just tells me that this is what is to come and can be expected by residents who live in these areas where there's high winds and red flag warnings. A few months ago on the Substack, I was talking about how if they actually want to shut the power off on every red flag day, there's regions and areas where you'll see these types of fire weather conditions go on for weeks. And Xcel Energy made a statement yesterday saying, hey, your power is going to be out through Saturday into Sunday with no real timeline of when we'll start turning it all back on. But tens of thousands of people are without power. They're saying maybe 60,000 now at this point. It could be more. But again, it's not like no one saw this coming. The audience, the listeners and the readers knew this was coming because I've been really hammering this topic for a while now. If you're a new listener and you want to check that out, go to thehotshotwakeup.substack.com. We're 100% ad-free and sponsorship-free, and everything I do is supported through those subscriptions. It's thehotshotwakeup.substack.com. Now, moving on to that Oklahoma fire, this is where things start getting really interesting. Yesterday, this fire popped. They had 55-mile-an-hour winds pushing through this area, which is Sharon, Oklahoma, and Woodward County. They evacuated that city, and since those evacuations have been lifted, but during that firefight, a Mayday call went out by firefighters who were engaged on that incident, saying that firefighters had been injured, we need medical treatment, and in the fog of war, you just lose a lot of information, you don't exactly know what's going on. But I've been in that before, so I know it. Just give it 24 hours and some things will start to shake out. And that's exactly what we got this morning. Two very, very interesting facts. One, the injuries were two firefighters that sustained burn injuries. So they were engaged, the fire got too close, or they got too close, and they got burned up. No fatalities have been reported, but these individuals were transported to Woodward Hospital and are receiving treatments for those burns. The fire authorities, as of this morning, didn't have an update on their condition, but said that they are receiving treatment. And it doesn't sound like they were taken to any sort of major burn center, at least at this point in time. And then the other thing that came out, as the details started to shake out, is that KOCO News, which is an ABC News affiliate out of Oklahoma, a little small local news station, they reported this morning that this fire started as a controlled burn or a prescribed burn. And then it, from the looks of it, it got wildly out of control. They didn't provide many more details on that. I did do some looking around to see if there was any public announcements about a prescribed fire happening down in that area. I couldn't find any in the short time that I looked before I sat down and started recording, but they are reporting down in Oklahoma locally that, hey, someone was doing a controlled burn or a prescribed burn. 55-mile-an-hour winds came up and this thing blew out. We evacuated a whole town and two firefighters got burned. So, kind of a big news story there. You hate to hear that kind of stuff. As of this morning, the spokesperson for the folks commanding that fire down there said that they basically have wrapped the head of that fire. I'm sure there's still plenty of work to be done. I'm sure there's hot spots everywhere. And when they were asked if there were any structures or houses lost, they said they hadn't made their final assessment yet and all of that stuff would be coming. So a lot of stuff happening down there. This fire down in Texas, the Dominguez fire, it's on the border of Mexico and Texas. It's a smaller fire, but it is right on the border. Like, it's right on the border. You could throw a rock into Mexico from this fire. They kind of had that thing wrapped up 2 days ago, a day ago, but it did jump a containment line. And then as they were trying to catch that slop over, a civilian drone started flying over the fire, and they had to shut all aircraft down. Boots on the ground lost their air support, whether that's helicopters for bucket work or tankers for retardant work, which we have a huge conversation coming up about the massive mess that's happening in the retardant industry right now with wildfire. But it shut down air operations, and then the fire grew because they didn't have the support they needed to try to slow that thing down. As of this morning, it was 40% contained, and it sounds like they are probably going to get this thing wrangled fairly soon if they don't have any more distractions or shutdowns. But I wanted to mention that because there's a tremendous amount of individuals who fly drones and chase around weather, and they've started chasing around wildfires, and they just put their drones up and they fly them around. And I think they're too stupid to realize that that causes major, major problems. It also causes aviation crashes. which then also endangers the people on the ground as well, and not just the pilots. I was involved in a drone incursion during a tanker drop out in Utah, and since I was the supervisor on the ground and the closest on that division when it happened, I ended up in an FAA investigation and had to deal with the sheriff's department for probably 4.5 months, 5 months. I was dealing with this deal, and they would send me YouTube videos and say, hey, does this look like footage from where you were on the fire? And they would ask me if I knew the type of drone and if I heard anything. So it turns into a big deal, is what I'm saying, if you start flying your drones around. Montana was very proactive last year, and they did basically a common sense solution, which is basically they passed a law that if there is a drone flying over a wildfire, you are legally able to shoot it out of the sky. If you got a shotgun, you can pull it out and you can shoot it down. If you have other means to bring down that drone, you are legally allowed in Montana to destroy and bring down any drone platform that's flying over your fire. Maybe more states will start implementing that law. I don't know. But it needs to be made known that if you fly a drone over a wildfire, basically all operations stop. This happened in Minnesota a couple weeks ago. Someone was flying a drone over a fire near the historic Split Rock Lighthouse that was near Beaver Bay, Minnesota. And they were running helicopter bucket work in some steep shoreline terrain, and they noticed that a drone was flying overhead, and they had to shut down all air operations. So just heads up, don't be stupid. And if you're in Montana, someone's probably going to pull out a shotgun and shoot your drone out of the sky. And they'll probably laugh while they're doing it, because quite honestly, that sounds like a lot of fun. But before we wrap this up, I just want to say that for a while now, we've been talking about how wildfire litigation is going to bring a lot of unintended consequences and unexpected consequences to people in the public if it continued. And of course, it's going to continue because it's very advantageous for law firms and lawyers. There's a ton of money on the table when those sorts of things happen. And then it leads to knee-jerk wildfire policy. Those will also lead to unintended consequences. That's where all these AI wildfire risk maps came out of. And then places like Washington, Oregon, California, people got sued. Then they're like, hey, these wildfire risk maps aren't accurate. Those sorts of things start to happen. And as I've been predicting, you're just going to get red flag day, no power. That's what it's going to be. You're not going to get power on red flag days. Because these companies are tired of getting sued. The whole debacle down in Hawaii, that's going to be a multi-billion dollar lawsuit. And then everybody's like, what's the solution? What's the solution? And then I provide a solution, which is, how do you stop that from happening? If that's the actual question, how do you stop power lines from falling over and causing wildfires during windy days? Okay, that's the question. The solution is bury those power lines. But whenever I offer that solution, the same people who are like, we got to stop this, they then respond to me and say, well, that's way too expensive to do. You can't do that, so you need a different option. And then I say, well, the other option then, to stop power lines from falling over and causing wildfires during windy days, if you don't want to bury the power lines, the other option is to turn the power off, okay? And then those same people will be like, we can't turn the power off. We need power. What about old people and people with medical devices and all of that stuff? Yeah, I know. I know. That's what I've been trying to say. It's a problem. It's a big problem. And then you look at one of the fires that started in Colorado yesterday. After the power went off, someone fired up a generator, and then that generator caused a fire. So, you know, what are we looking at here? I'm telling you right now that after yesterday, generators in Colorado are probably sold out. You probably can't find a generator in Colorado today. Or if you can, there's probably other people scrambling to get it. So I've been saying that this is coming. It was easy to see, not only because I've been in the industry for so long, but there's always unintended consequences to knee-jerk reactions and lawsuits, and they're slowly starting to show their face, And ultimately, what it comes down to is if you're in a state for the next 6.5 months of fire season and you have high winds and red flag warnings in the area, this sets a precedent, what XL Energy did in Colorado. And you are now more likely to lose your power going forward for, honestly, possibly multiple days on end. Because this is the solution. Because no one wants to bury the power lines. And then when you shut the power off, people complain that the power is shut off. So what? What are you going to do? What are you going to do, folks? I've offered two solutions. They've been rejected. So I would love to hear other people's suggestions. I would love to hear that. There's people in my comments being like, you need to localize power supplies and you need power communes, is what people are telling me. But still, you're still running transmission lines. That's what you're doing. So I appreciate that suggestion, and I'm willing to whiteboard it out and talk about it and learn more about it. But on a grand scale, the two solutions that stand out is you either bury power lines or you shut the power off. And then if you don't shut the power off, the power companies now know that they will be sued into bankruptcy, so they just don't care anymore. They're like, 100,000 people, you don't have power for the next 2 days. That's where we're at. It's only going to get busier from here. If you want to quickly talk about Europe, Greece had some fires happen the last couple days. They had 3 firefighters injured over on the island of Crete. And Spain has started to see some wildfires pop off as well. So they are slowly starting to pick up. And as you can expect, you'll see these injuries and other accidents that happen when you start aggressively fighting these wildfires over in Europe. Now, we got some heavy stuff to dive into now, dealing with the retardant industry. This week, I put out a podcast on the Substack. Again, thehotshotwakeup.substack.com. Everything I do is supported through those subscriptions. So if you want to check out that podcast, I was talking about the Perimeter Solutions sole awarded contract for fire retardant for the United States Forest Service for the year of 2024. That contract was put on hold or suspended because someone protested that contract. Now, before that happened, and there's a lot of people who are like, I searched the internet and I can't find that. It's like, that's because it's not on the internet. I'm the only person who reported on it. I viewed the protest that was put into the United States Forest Service and saw the suspension announcement. So for the folks who are sending me emails and messages being like, hey, I searched Fox News and CNN to try to find this, and I scoured the internet, and the only person who has it is you. Yes. That's the answer. Yes, I am. I'm the only person who reported on it. Maybe more people will pick it up after this podcast, but I was talking about that. And then days before that, another major retardant contract was suspended by the United States Forest Service, and that dealing with Fortress Retardant, who is another very large retardant contractor for wildfire. Now, instead of their contract being protested by someone else and then having it suspended, the United States Forest Service themselves canceled the contract. And for very, very interesting and important reasons, what ended up happening? So, Fortress Retardant came out with a new kind of fire retardant. And it was a magnesium chloride based retardant that they put through a bunch of environmental testing. And they said, hey, our retardant is environmentally friendly. We can prove it through the studies. You should use our retardant more. Give us the contracts. And it was widely heralded by people in the industry saying, this is the new solution. And they were saying that because of the retardant lawsuits that took place up in Missoula, Montana, where whatever the organization is called, former employees of the Forest Service or whatever it is. They sued the Forest Service because they were dumping retardant in areas that were riparian areas or waterways. And so when Fortress came out with this retardant, they're like, oh, this is great. But they implemented it in 2023. And at the end of the season, when they were washing out all the tankers, they started to notice that the tankers were starting to corrode and, like, violently corrode. Like, aggressive. And so they had a review of it. All these tanker companies are like, shit, our tankers are corroding away. Like, this is going to cost us a ton of money. So then they filed a report with the U.S. Forest Service, which I'll read here. And it became this huge thing in the industry. The United Aerial Firefighters Association went public with it and said, we got a huge problem. And then the Forest Service canceled that contract. What's interesting to me is then days later, a retardant contract was awarded solely to Perimeter Solutions, which is the competitor to Fortress. That contract was suspended just days after the Forest Service said, you can't use your retardant anymore. It sounds like there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scene. But let's dive into this. This is from Aerial Fire Mag talking about this Fortress issue that is taking place. It says, Compass Minerals, which is the parent company of Fortress, announced today that the United States Forest Service has informed the company that it will not enter into a contract for the use of magnesium chloride-based aerial fire retardants for the 2024 season. If you're in the industry, that is massive news. During scheduled winter air tanker inspections, as part of the United States Forest Service's integrated operational field evaluations, it was discovered that certain air tankers that had flown Fortress North America's proprietary magnesium chloride-based aerial fire retardants revealed significant signs of corrosion in areas where the buildup of retardant had occurred. Okay. So my first thought is, they judge this stuff to be environmentally friendly, but it eats metal. You know? So the tanker companies started to freak out. Because now you can't operate your aircraft. And what does that do? It takes away from your bottom dollar, and you got big, big problems. It says the findings from this more extensive inspection raised aircraft safety concerns, prompting the United States Forest Service's decision to inform Compass Minerals in late March that it would be unable to define the scope and the associated terms and conditions of the new contract with the company until the National Transportation Safety Board and the National Institute of Standards and Technology conducted a coordinated independent assessment of findings. Now, if you want to know how big of a deal that is, NIST, or the National Institute of Standards and Technology, they're the ones who investigated the Twin Towers collapse after 9/11. That's how big of a deal this is. They said, listen, if you want to continue using this product, you got to go through the top regulatory people. It continues saying, while we are disappointed with the findings of the initial inspection, we share the United States Forest Service's prioritization of safety above all other factors. That's coming from Edward Dowling Jr., who is the president and CEO of that company. Back in December of 2022, Fortress became the first new company in over two decades to have long-term aerial fire retardants added to the United States Forest Service's qualified product list. Like I'm saying, this was a huge, huge deal. They had two products that met and exceeded the United States Forest Service's rigorous testing criteria in such categories as environmental effects and toxicity to aquatic and mammalian species, corrosion on a variety of aircraft metals, burn retention and retardation efficacy, and the completion of a live wildfire operation field evaluation. So they went through the standardized testing to get their products approved. Part of that approval process is to show that it doesn't corrode aircraft. Then they got extra points for saying it was environmentally friendly, and then a year later, when they started washing out all the tankers, they're like, hey, all of our all of our tanks are corroding away. We got a major, major problem, guys. It says in May of 2023, Fortress entered into a contract with the United States Forest Service to provide up to 5 mobile deployed fire retardant air tanker bases during the 2023 wildfire season. So they were running this stuff through all sorts of aircraft. The company was in the process of negotiating a contract for the 2024 wildfire season when the new corrosion concerns were identified. Okay? Now, then their contract was canceled. Perimeter Systems, who is their competitor, got the sole awarded contract for retardant for the 2024 season. Then a formal protest was filed. We don't know by who, but someone filed a protest. And now the Perimeter Solutions contract has been suspended until that's resolved. There's a mess going on in the retardant world right now. There might even be a war going on in the retardant world right now. So then we get involved with the United Aerial Firefighters Association. I've had some communication with board members on that association. They are stand-up people. They're people in the industry. They're people who own aircraft companies. They're pilots, people like that. And they really started hammering down and put a very strongly worded letter to the United States Forest Service. It says, following the suspension of the United States Forest Service Integrated Operational Field Evaluation on magnesium chloride-based retardant last week, the United Aerial Firefighters Association authored a letter to send multiple agency staff and congressional representatives this week expressing the need for the U.S. Forest Service to urgently revisit the testing standards for the new retardant certification. The letter was written by Paul Peterson, the executive director of the United Aerial Firefighters Association, and said the following. Quote, I am writing you on behalf of the United Aerial Firefighters Association regarding a critical matter concerning the current process for adding new retardant products to the U.S. Forest Service's qualified products list. It's a big deal. Those are my words, but I'm sure Paul Peterson knows that it's a very big deal as well. It continues saying the testing process as it stands today has a serious impact on the safety of the U.S. aerial firefighting fleet. And just like I said, this Fortress retardant was put through this testing process and found to be safe from corroding aircraft. And then 1 year later, all these tanker companies were like, our aircrafts are being eaten from the inside out. The statement continues saying, last week, the UAFA members were informed by the U.S. Forest Service that the integration operational field evaluation for the new magnesium chloride-based retardant being evaluated was put on hold. This came after finding the fire retardant led to significant corrosion on air tankers over just one season of usage. As it must, the United States Forest Service prioritized the safety of the aircraft, aerial firefighters, and the public. However, this development underscores the urgent need to release and update the current process for adding new products to the U.S. Forest Service qualified products list. The corrosion identified in these air tankers appears to be significant enough that they will be unavailable for the 2024 fire season and will need to be repaired at a considerable cost, possibly running into the millions of dollars. Are you starting to see now why this is such a big deal? These aircraft were so corroded that they can no longer fight fire. That's a problem. It continues on saying the testing specifications used by the Forest Service to determine whether products are added to the list were created decades ago and were based on historical chemistry. The test protocols in the current specifications were assumed to be adequate based on years of successful use of long-term retardant products in all aircraft types. Over the past years, other products passed the qualification tests and were fully qualified, only to be proven unsafe to air tankers in the field. So obviously, it seems like the standards and the protocol they have set up is broken. It doesn't work anymore. It's failing. It continues saying, this demonstrates the inadequacy of the current specification standards and qualification process. This process must be reevaluated and rebuilt in the very near term to ensure aerial operations are safe and effective. Fire retardant technology will continue to evolve and new products will be introduced. The UAFA will continue to support our industry's innovation in the retardant industry. It is imperative, however, that the U.S. Forest Service revisit and modernize its process to ensure that it incorporates exhaustive testing protocols that accurately assess the safety and efficacy of these products, as well as the environmental impact of chemicals that have not been previously tested as fire retardant. Huge line right there. Chemicals that have not been previously tested as a fire retardant. It closes out saying, as the leading voice for the aerial firefighting industry, the UAFA is committed to advocating for the positive change and advancement of the industry to protect the safety of aerial firefighters and the public. They're asking to, quote, revise the retardant specification to include testing that simulates actual aerial operations. Okay, why aren't we doing that already? And demonstrates that fully qualified products are safe for aircrafts, crews, firefighters, and the environment. So let's have that conversation real quick. And shout out for the UAFA for putting that in there. If this retardant is corroding metal aircraft, what does it do to firefighters on the ground that get covered in it? Because you get it all over your skin. You get it on the back of your neck, you get it on your hands, you get it on your face. It's all over your clothing. It's all over your trucks. So my question is, if it eats aircraft, what does it do to the human body? And the UAFA asks that. Hey, this needs to be qualified not only for aircraft, but also for firefighters in the environment. It says they want to place a moratorium on the testing and qualification of new retardant products until the NTSB and NIST issue a final report on the damage done to the air tankers in the 2023 season, and the qualification process is revised and reissued. They are also asking that you include the industry in the revision of these specifications and determination of critical performance and safety factors. So, the people who operate these tanker companies that are being eaten by the retardant that they put in it are like, hey, if you're going to approve this stuff, can we like be involved in the process? Like, can we have any sort of say in what's being put into our aircraft? They're also asking that these tests be done by a third party. Quote, we need to conduct all qualification tests using a third-party laboratory. So they're like, hey, stop using the retardant company's laboratory. Stop using the Forest Service's laboratory. We need an independent, private, third-party tester to do these sorts of qualifications and ensuring standards. Paul Peterson, who closes out saying, by working together, we can prevent future incidents and safeguard the safety of our aircraft, firefighters, the public, and the environment. I'll tell you what, if you're the group that was suing the Forest Service for retardant last year up in Missoula, Montana, by the way, they won that case, and you started seeing that the retardant, that they're replacing the retardant that you were suing over is eating aircraft, boy, I bet they're licking their chops over this. What did you say there? The new environmentally friendly fire retardant eats metal? It consumes the aircraft that carries it? Yeah. Sounds like it does. Quote, I urge you to consider our concerns and prioritize the reassessment of the United States Forest Service Qualified Products List process. And thank you for your attention to this matter and look forward to your response. So the industry leaders are very, very concerned about this as well. And it's a huge, huge problem. Something to definitely look at. And like I said, if you want to hear more about the contract suspension of their competitor, Perimeter Solutions, that podcast was this week on Substack, thehotshotwakeup.substack.com. I'm ad-free, sponsorship-free. All of those subscriptions, you get all of the archives, the four podcasts that come out a week on Substack, all of the articles that come out on Substack, all the workouts, and that goes towards wildland firefighter donations as well. which the community has widely helped support through tens of thousands of dollars now at this point in time to firefighters who have been injured or helping their families after a fatality. One of the most recent took place in Colorado, where a firefighter was struck by a tree. We helped out in that situation. So if you want to support that, go to the hotshotwakeup.substack.com. But I find it interesting that all of this retardant debacle is all happening within a very short time frame. March 22nd, the Fortress contract was suspended and canceled, basically. Then Perimeter Solution in the next couple days got their sole awarded contract for retardant. And then on April 2nd, I believe it was, so 10 days after Fortress lost their contract, someone came in and said, we officially protest this sole award contract. And then that retardant contract has been suspended. So it seems like there might be a little internal war going on in the retardant world. I understand why. It is a billion-dollar industry. They have their own lobbyists. They have their own everything. It's a huge industry, people. It's a massive, massive industry. So, of course, they're going to fight for it. They're going to fight for every dollar. And we'll just have to see where it goes from here. We'll see what this next week brings. There's expected to be red flag warnings all over the place across the nation. High winds, low humidities. A lot of crews are still coming on. Shout out Pioneer Peak Hotshots. I know they're coming on next week up in Alaska. So I hope your critical training goes well. To all the other crews that have finished up and are bopping around the country, I think Smokey Bear Hotshots are bopping around. They were in Alabama. Now they're going to Florida. So these crews that are available are zipping around the country. They're not just sitting and doing stuff. They might be doing project work out of region, but hey, if you're a firefighter, you know project work out of region is better than project work in region. As long as they're paying you more than tens, which you would hope they would. When I was running a crew, I was kind of notoriously known for not accepting tens for out of region assignments. For people who don't know what that means, the standard schedule for a wildland firefighter, unless you're in Region 5 because someone in the region is trying to change it for whatever reason because they don't understand how wildland firefighting works, but that's a whole nother topic. Again, I've written about this over on Substack, but the usual schedule for wildland firefighters is a 4-10 work week. So 4 days, 10 hours, and then when those hours are up, you go on call. Why is that schedule great? Because you're already gone so much that if you are lucky enough to not get a fire call, you then have 3 days off, but you've also already worked your 40 hours. So you maintain your benefits, everything else, you still consider full-time. Region 5, someone up top in the region is trying to change that because they think that firefighters need to be sitting in an office 5 days a week for 8 hours a day instead of 4 days a week for 10 hours a day, and they don't deserve 3 days off, and simply because they have to sit in an office at some regional cubicle that, hey, wildland firefighters have to as well. It's really, really dumb, and basically every firefighter is against it. That being said, when you go out of region, you're now away from your home, you're traveling, and you show up to the region, and they're like, hey, we're going to pay you 4-10s, and that's it. It's like, well, I would be getting paid the exact same sleeping in my bed at home. So we should talk about this. How about you do 12s, and we'll put in that work. We will work those 12s. And it's always a sticky situation, but I remember one time I was down in Colorado, and they were doing some new policy with crews that came into the region, and I just so happened to be the first crew to be put through this policy. Anyway, their policy went against my policy, and I said, hey, we're just going to go home if you're going to pay us 10s. And the gal that I was working with, you know, God bless her soul, she just was trying to do the right thing. I get it. But she also didn't get it. and she was very rude, and she told me to go home and you can leave and get the hell out of here. And I said, sounds good. Yeah, that actually sounds good. Everyone load up. It's time to go home. And then, of course, her supervisor called me and was like, hey, I didn't know you were getting paid 10s. Of course we'll pay you 12s. You know, you guys are killing it. You're doing good work. You've already been to 4 fires. Why the hell are we paying you 10s? That doesn't make any sense. And ultimately, it just came down that it was a power move, which I think a lot of crew supervisors see when they go out of region, is whoever's in charge at that district or whoever's in charge on that forest tries to pull a, you know, they try to pull a move on you to show that they're the top dog. But hey, sometimes you just got to stick to your values and morals and do what you think is right for your people. And that's what I always thought. Your people need to get paid. And that was the number one priority on top of safety and making sure everybody gets home. And so that's the sort of thing I would fight for. But that's a whole roundabout way of saying that there are crews out there that are already on and they're out of region working and traveling around the nation and getting some pretty good tours in early. So the fire season's well underway. I'll keep everybody informed on what's what coming up next week on the Substack podcast. Should be out Tuesday or Wednesday. Maybe it'll be Wednesday. We'll see. Just see how it goes. Again, I just do all this on my free time, so if you want to support what I do, you just go to thehotshotwakeup.substack.com, click on subscribe. I'm ad-free, I'm sponsorship-free, and 100% community-supported. On that note, reach out to someone you haven't talked to in a while, check in on your homies, see how they're doing. Get outside, get some fresh air, stretch, hydrate, eat those quality calories, because those are the ones that count. Get the rest you need, because you need that to recover, but when you get up, as always, you got to get it done.